This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, throughout the COVID crisis, which has lasted now 18 months, Sweden has been an outlier in its approach to the problem. Their state epidemiologist, Anders Tegnell, has taken a very singular view, and it's caused a lot of curiosity, and he has been extremely accessible to media, including a piece for Channel 4, which my guest today, Philip O'Connor, an Irish journalist living in Stockholm, assisted with, and he knows Tegnell very well. The reason we're talking about Sweden is that the death toll now is shocking. It's over 14,000, and it's many times more, as I understand it, than their Scandinavian counterparts. Now, Tegnell took a very singular view, which was, at one point, it seemed that herd immunity was inevitable and was welcome. And certainly in terms of lockdowns, Sweden didn't go as far as we did or most other countries. I'm joined now by Philip from Stockholm. Philip, the death toll is shocking, really, when you consider, I think there's 10 million people in Sweden, there's 5 million people here, we've lost 5,000 people, and the Scandinavian neighbours of Sweden don't appear to have had a death toll anything like Sweden's.
Yeah, it's even more shocking, Eamon, when you look at it in direct comparison to their Scandinavian neighbours in Norway and Denmark. So Sweden's figure as we speak, I checked it out just before we went on air here, 14,692 deaths in a country of just over between 10 and 11 million people. In Norway, that figure is 822. So, you know, with twice the population, you're talking about, you know, 15 times or more the number of deaths that Norway has had. And in Denmark, Denmark has had a higher death rate than what Norway has. But still, again, around twice the population, Sweden has around twice the population of Denmark, 2,584 deaths. And I think that's, you know, Tegnell would always talk about the long game. He'd say, you know, you have to look at these things over the course of time. But I think now that, you know, we're not in a situation anymore where the rest of these countries are going to catch up. Norway is experiencing a spike in cases. There was 1,550 new cases on September 2nd. That's, I think, the highest number they've ever recorded there. But even at that, the Swedes are now up over a million cases. Over 10% of the population has had COVID-19 at this stage. So it really is, as you mentioned in your intro there, it's a complete and utter outlier in Scandinavia and indeed in the world.
Now, Tegnell has always been prepared, and his mentor as well, who was a former state epidemiologist, they have always been prepared to defend their position and, in Tegnell's case, to make himself available to media. There was a point early on where I think over 1,000 other doctors and scientists published an open letter dissenting from Tegnell's view and saying this was dangerous. It appears that it was dangerous, and that the death toll can be directly linked to decisions made by Tegno?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that at this stage, Eamon. It's very interesting. I found a USB hard disk this morning, that Channel 4 piece that you mentioned. Yeah. We made, I think, back in April of last year. And I actually found the interviews on that this morning. And it's absolutely uncanny how accurate some of those people that you mentioned there, that I think it was 3,000 academics in total, who sent an open letter saying, we don't agree with what he's doing. But it was uncanny how accurate they were in terms of saying that it would be the elderly that would suffer most from this, that Sweden was an outlier, that they needed to lockdown society in the way that other societies at the time were locking down in Italy, in Australia, in New Zealand, in South Korea. And what is also uncanny is that those people have been completely ignored. And to this day, even with those numbers, that 14,692 deaths that we just mentioned, they are still being ignored. They have been written out of history. And this idea that Tegnell somehow got it right and that he's doing his best and that he's going through this thing. Now, again, he would maintain that he was working on the best information that he had available. But it's so different. And the differences are so vast compared to the other Scandinavian countries that you just have to ask yourself now who it was. You know, it's kind of like the emperor's new clothes.
Yes.
You kind of have to sort of, you know, look at the fact that now maybe the guy has been naked all along. In contrast to that, right, just to give you a little sort of a very local, very recent perspective, right, the schools opened here almost exactly 2 weeks ago. And in Västergötland, which is where the town of Gothenburg, or the city of Gothenburg is on the west coast, there's been a 160% increase in COVID-19 in upper secondary school students. So here there's no talk of masks, there's no talk of ventilation. As you know, the schools are pretty much open all the time. They closed briefly for that class of student at the beginning, pretty much up until the summer. They went to remote learning, but they've been pretty much open all the time. For middle school students, kids up to the age of 16, that has gone up by 100% in the last 2 weeks alone. And yet there's no debate. I know that an awful lot of Irish teachers and parents and students are worried about the back to school situation there where you are. And there's talk about masks and CO2 monitors and that. None of that is happening in Sweden because basically the whole nation has got behind Tegnell. They're not as fervent now as what they were. There's very few tattoos being made. I don't see the t-shirts on sale as much as what I did anymore, but very few people are willing to admit that they may have got this wrong.
Yes. What did they do? I know, for example, bars and restaurants stayed open.
Yep.
And the belief was, am I wrong about his stated belief that herd immunity was inevitable, not just in Sweden, everywhere, and it was better, I'm paraphrasing, of course, to go with the flow and accept that as a fact of life. And that is what he did, and the outcome is shocking.
I think exactly, yeah, and you were right to point that out, that you're paraphrasing there, Eamon, because he talks both in general terms and in specific terms, and this is one of the things that has made it so difficult to work out what he was saying, because we know in private from freedom of information requests that this idea of herd immunity has been discussed, and that's okay. Among scientists, that's okay to do that, right? Because as Tegnell would say, in sort of broad strokes, there are two ways to get out of this pandemic. There is vaccines and there's herd immunity, right? And essentially vaccines are a sort of an artificial contributor to herd immunity. That's the way Tegnell has described it in the past. The problem with that is, how do you approach that? So until such time as vaccines became available, most countries around the world, again, we're generalizing, chose to go down the route of lockdown, of trying to restrict the spread of this particular virus. Sweden didn't. It chose to try to mitigate it. It chose to try to preserve its health service by not allowing that to be overrun. And that simply hasn't worked, because by letting it run through society, what has happened is that has given air to these mutations that we're seeing coming out, the Delta variant. Yes. We've heard about the Oxford variant previously, and we'll hear about new variants, no doubt, in the near future. And there's a dawning realization here. And there's no admission whatsoever from Tegnell that he got it wrong. Again, he would say that he's using the best information available to draw, and a lot of historical information to draw conclusions. But he said last week that the big problem now for Tegnell and for scientists around the world is this: people who refuse or who decide not to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
So in Sweden at the moment, around about 80% of the adult population, the vaccines have been available for free to people from the ages of 16 and up. Around about 80% of the population has received one dose, but only 57% of the population has received two doses. And of course, the under 16s haven't been covered at all in this. I think in very few limited cases of immunosuppressed people, they would have gotten them. But that is actually, you know, something that almost frightens Tegnell. I don't want to put words in his mouth now, but this is not something that he likes at all, because he has seen in the past how the virus has mutated very, very quickly. And we keep hearing about the Delta variant, how it's twice as infectious, how it does more damage, how the people who are ending up, the unvaccinated people for the most part, who are ending up in intensive care actually get an awful lot sicker with it. And what that says to Tegnell, that's a signpost of the future, that this is not likely to get any milder. In fact, it's likely to get worse. So it wouldn't surprise me now if, I mean, I think that the focus of public health in Sweden now is trying to get over this vaccine resistance. There are certain groups within society. Many men age 60 plus for some reason don't seem to want to take it. Many people in Skåne, where the city of Malmö is located in the most southern county of Sweden, there seems to be a great opposition to that down there. They're in some immigrant groups. There's, you know, the usual conspiracy theories. But that is really a sort of a blind spot for society in terms of being able to deal with that. So that's the next, you know, if the horse has bolted in terms of mitigation, then vaccines need to be administered. And that will be the next big challenge now for Johan Carlson, the leader of the public health authority here, and for Tegnell as the state epidemiologist, because like they say, it's either a vaccine or herd immunity, and herd immunity is simply not working.
Now, the number of deaths that you've described there are surely placing an intolerable burden on the health service, because before death, there's hospitalization, there's intensive care, and I wonder if, when you say there's no debate in Sweden, what about journalism? What about, for example, taking the figures you gave us, 57% only with having had a second jab. That compares here in Ireland with way over 80% and heading up towards 90% of adults. And we regard that rollout as a success, as indeed the British do. It doesn't mean you won't have spikes, but it does mean that the hospital system, which is struggling anyway, is to some extent protected.
I think that's the holy grail for the Swedish Health Authority. But the real big difficulty in this, and we're seeing this in the United States, we're seeing this in Britain, it's this idea of communication, right? So we're into a situation now with the coronavirus pandemic where facts actually don't matter anymore. This has become very much driven by fear and by feelings. So you can explain to somebody, you know, we've had so much vaccine misinformation going around the world about the side effects of it. There's been reports of deaths. There's been reports of disfigurement. There's been, you know, all sorts of mad stuff has come out, which there's no basis in scientific fact for. You can't, you know, in very few cases we've been able to say that the use of a vaccine has led to the imminent death of somebody and that the vaccine played a part in that. There are, of course, side effects, as we know, but it's getting so difficult to convince people that this is the right thing to do because of the public discourse, right? And that, to me, is now the interesting part of it. You mentioned the role of journalism in that. And, you know, yet we see it, you know, pretty much everywhere. We see a situation whereby with Brexit, for instance, you know, we see in the situation around Irish unity, that people have such strong feelings about these things that essentially, you know, we can't actually change their mind. We can present new things to them, but if they have decided and if they're that sort of stuck in the mud in terms of the way they think, we can't actually help them to change their minds, because they're just not receptive to it. We haven't created a climate of debate where people are receptive to do that. I remember many years ago studying media and communication science, and I remember reading, I can't remember who it was that wrote it, but there's an academic who wrote that mass media cannot tell us what to think. It can only tell us what to think about.
Yes.
So it's actually our peers. In a private discussion with you over a glass of wine, Eamon, you and I can have a discussion, and I know and respect you, and you can influence me, and I would hope that you know and respect me, and that I can influence you in some ways as well. That's where this happens, but it's not happening. And in so many aspects of our society, it's not happening anymore, because we're becoming entrenched in our fears. And fear was a very powerful tool in the beginning for Tegnell and for epidemiologists and for governments around the world trying to deal with this, and they used it. They told people to stay at home. They told them, don't be the one who's responsible for infecting a relative and killing them. And people did that. And now they're kind of being surprised by the fact that that same fear has now turned against vaccines, because they've seen how quickly this happened. You and I discussed how long it takes to find a vaccine. In human history, we have never had a vaccine for any illness as quickly as we've ever had this. And of course there's going to be nerves. Of course there's going to be fear about that. But that has to be met then by reason and by logic and by an understanding and an acceptance that that fear is there. And instead we're coming with the big stick and very, very little carrot. And again, that's what's going to prove to be a huge stumbling block now for Tegnell, where they want to draw back on the fear and start to encourage people to take the vaccine.
Yes, and throughout my lifetime, which is a long time, Scandinavians have been renowned for their ability to reason, they've been, Sweden in particular, was held up as, you know, whenever we had a problem here or in Britain, somebody would say, well, look, in Sweden, they don't have that problem because the Swedes aren't. At the same time, it emerged in those back in the day that they had the highest suicide rate in the world. However, this is the key question, a key question, Philip. The Swedish economy. Now, all economies have taken big hits because of employment missing, places having to close, for all kinds of reasons, really, people not travelling. How has that paid off for Sweden, this Tegnell point of view, in terms of the Swedish economy? Is it more robust? Are there fewer people unemployed than one would expect?
I think we have to see the economy. We have to kind of split it up a little bit according to class, Eamon, because there's a certain amount of people who are always going to do well out of a crisis, you know?
Yeah.
So the people who got involved in bringing personal protective equipment into Sweden made out like bandits. Anybody who owns shares in private healthcare, and, you know, there's an awful lot of healthcare here is taxpayer funded, but there's a lot of private operators, and they would have done very, very well over the last year because of the increase in healthcare and the number of you know, it's private healthcare operators who are administering the vaccine, for instance, right? So it's kind of split up. Certain industries were hit very hard. You mentioned bars and restaurants. They were able to stay open, but they were restricted. Everybody had to sit at the table. They had to close at 8 o'clock, and that really hit an awful lot of hospitality very hard. I'm sure you saw yesterday that ABBA have new music out.
Yes.
What very few people know is that Björn Ulvaeus, the guitar player in ABBA, is very involved in the hotel industry, and he was about to open a hotel in his hometown of Västervik last year, and his investment would have been hit very hard by that because there was simply no tourism. People stayed at home. But the other side of that then is that you can't get a length of timber of any length in Sweden this summer because everybody was building decks and getting involved in home improvement. So certain parts of the society, certain parts of the economy, things went very, very well for them. But taxi drivers, for instance, were absolutely destroyed.
Yes.
In the beginning because the airport simply shut down. And then, you know, the worse Sweden's international reputation got, the less people were prepared to come to Sweden. So many people would have gone out of business. You know, people might have had 3, 4, 5 cars on the road and bank loans and that kind of thing. They simply went out of business. They had to hand the keys back, they had to hand their taxi plates back. So it very much depends on what strata of society you belong to. I'd say Bjorn from ABBA still has a few quid in the bank, where an awful lot of people would have been adversely affected. But then again, Eamon, I like to look for the simple signs of the street are what tell me what's happening in this country. And when I came into my little studio here in the centre of Stockholm this morning to talk to you today, it took me 20, 25 minutes to find a parking space.
Right.
The kids are back in school 2 weeks, and that tells me that people in the office blocks around here, one of the world's major accountancy firms is just up the street here, they're back, and they're back in the office. So business is returning to business as usual. The activity is going on. Things are starting to recover. There was a sort of a dip there. Now, I don't think they were entirely protected because this was a global phenomenon. But I do think that Sweden is bouncing back slightly quicker than what many other economies around the world will do.
Meanwhile, the body count rises. I wonder about the politics of all of this. I understand Sweden might have its first woman prime minister soon. There's been speculation about that. Has there been a political backlash?
Yeah, this is a fascinating country, Eamon, because I know you've been to Denmark when you were playing football many years ago. I think you played for Ireland down there.
I did.
And there's a huge difference between the Danes, the Swedes and the Norwegians. Okay, the Swedes are seen in the same way as the Irish would see the British, the former colonial power who always think that they know best. They've ruled everywhere. They've ruled Finland and part of Russia. They ruled Denmark until the middle 1800s. The same thing with Norway. So they're kind of looked upon as the big brother that everybody thinks is arrogant. Danes, if they don't like you or if they think you're an idiot, they'll tell you you're an idiot.
Yeah.
But Swedes Swedes don't like conflict, okay? Right. So you have this consensus-based society. So it's actually very difficult to get into an argument with a Swede, okay? The expression here is dålig stämning. If you create a bad atmosphere, you're the bad person for seeking this conflict.
Right.
Whereas you and I would prefer to have it out, punch and all, as you did with John Giles many times.
Yeah.
So that's very much avoidable here. So even in this political thing, around COVID, very few politicians have been prepared to really go for the throat of the Prime Minister, Stefan Löfven. They haven't been prepared to. They have done so, but not in a way that would be done towards Micheál Martin in Ireland, Donald Trump or Joe Biden in America, or Boris Johnson in the UK. Now, Löfven is he's a former welder. He came from a union background. He has a reputation as a great negotiator. It's extremely annoying because he really is almost a technocrat, Eamon. He likes to get that consensus, perhaps more than anybody else, to sit down and hammer out a deal. He was the first prime minister in Sweden there a few months ago. A vote of no confidence in him arose, and he was the first Swedish prime minister ever to lose one of them. So Olof Palme, Tage Erlander, Carl Bildt, everybody got through that. Fredrik Reinfeldt, everybody went through that process. Nobody ever lost until Löfven did. And he has now said a few weeks ago, about 2-3 weeks ago, he said he's stepping aside because there's going to be an election here in 2022, the first Sunday in September next year. And he's stepping aside in time to give his successor, most likely finance Minister Magdalena Andersson, the chance to get in there, to get her feet under the table, and to essentially forget what has happened here. Okay, so if the Swedes are afraid of conflict, they are also at times afraid of visiting the less illustrious parts of their past, right? And an extremely good example of that is the Second World War, where Sweden would claim to have been a neutral country like Ireland and Switzerland. And what nobody wants to talk about is how Nazi troop trains were allowed to go through Sweden to Norway, that it was used as a base to attack Finland.
Yes.
Nobody ever wants to talk about these things. Nobody ever wants to talk about the forced sterilization of people with mental issues. Right, there are things that are simply not brought up. The mistakes that Sweden has made as a society, despite its proud social democratic tradition, they are never to be revisited. So it can be, you know, it's almost like putting these things in Pandora's box and putting them to one side. So the mistakes that have been made, there is a commission that is investigating the entire state's response to the coronavirus, Tegnell, the public health authority, everybody and everything that they did, how healthcare has been handled. And I think that that report will be very, very damning, and it will be quickly swept under the carpet because, as we know, in many societies, nobody likes accountability because, you know, they want to keep their place at the trough. It's just how you do that. In Ireland, sometimes we don't even look at these things at all. In Sweden, they'll be seen to do something, but then it'll be quietly filed away.
Now, you referred earlier to the tattoos that people aren't having done. These tattoos, for people who weren't listening to the Stand back then, there were people rushing to have tattoos of Tegnell as a national hero when it looked as if he singularly in across Europe and indeed the world, had said, we can ride this out and we can do it without lockdowns and we can do it my way, which is really, I think, the herd immunity way. Has he adjusted his view? And how does he account for the fact that the numbers in relative terms are deeply shocking when you compare them to the rest of Europe, leaving the UK out because they've had pretty shocking figures as well. But here in Ireland, for example, or in Norway, as you say, only 800, less than 1,000 people dead. How does he possibly defend that position?
Well, I think there's two things there. One is kicking the can down the road, Eamon. So again, he would have said to me a long time ago, don't talk to me about weeks or months or, you know, 6 months or a year. Talk to me in 5 years' time when we know how the outcome is going to be.
Yeah.
I think he thought all along that Sweden, you know, and again, I don't wish to be crass or I don't wish to be insulting to people who've lost people to COVID-19, but Sweden basically chose to front load the deaths, okay?
Yes.
The vulnerable people who are out there. In the beginning, he talked about these pillars of the Swedish mitigation strategy, which was not to overload the health system, keep washing your hands, and to protect the elderly, right? The last of those points was a total and utter failure. Protecting the elderly absolutely did not work. And most of those who died have been, you know, of the ages of 70 and upwards. And I'll give an example of what happened, okay? So where I'm sitting talking to you now, and where we were recording the Stand for the last year and a half, I've been sitting probably a few hundred meters from an old people's home here, which deals with patients with dementia, okay?
Yes.
It's privately owned by a company. I'm not going to name them, but it's privately owned. This is common knowledge college in Sweden. And they discovered at the beginning when this was happening, the public health authority was coming out and saying, okay, you can't mix patients who have COVID and non-COVID patients. In Swedish, it's called cohort vård. The nearest translation I can get is cohort care. So you put people into cohorts, into specific classes, and you deal with them in that way. This place wasn't built for that. You couldn't keep dementia patients. You can't just lock them up. They're not prisoners. These are people, elderly people with dignity. They were the ones who built Olof Palme's people's home. So the problem was that they were understaffed. So you would have people who were wandering around at night, some of whom might have had COVID and the staff didn't know, some of whom the staff did know had COVID. And one nurse in particular, she sounded the alarm to management. Management did nothing. She went to the Expressive newspaper here, which would be the equivalent of the Evening Herald in Ireland or the London Evening Standard in the UK. And she was one of the few people, many people were quoted in an article about this place. She was one of the few who went out there with her name. And rather than be treated as a hero by her managers and the owners of this this facility, she was given a written warning for being disloyal to the company, for being disloyal to her employer.
Yes.
Okay? Around about half the patients in that place died in the first few weeks of the pandemic.
Yes.
But what they were more concerned with was, and I hate to use it, was the cover-up. They didn't want people knowing that this was what had happened. They would say outwardly that we're looking after these people, we're not mixing. If you're a nurse and you come into a contact with a COVID patient, then you're not allowed to have contact with non-COVID patients. All of that was just a smokescreen. That wasn't what was happening day to day. So when Tegnell looks at these things, he would sort of say, well, I made the plan and said that this is what it should be. If other people didn't execute, well, then it's up to the Department of Health. It's up to the private healthcare providers. It's up to them to sort that out. I came with the strategy. You guys have to execute it. Now, I think he would say as well, you know, we often hear that people are almost classed, you know, as being, okay, well, people with underlying conditions, you know, well, it can be expected that they will die. People who are elderly, people with lung and heart conditions, people who are obese are often named. And I think that, you know, Tegnell would say that, you know, many of these, you know, they call them multi-illnesses in Swedish. And I think he was sort of, you know, almost explaining it away by going, well, if it wasn't COVID, it would have been something else. And again, there's a crassness to that, to this idea that, you know, these people's days were numbered anyway. And yet it seems to, you know, people here seem to be, and they seem to accept that. They seem to accept what he's saying. And I had a difficulty understanding this because, of course, we've had a tradition in my lifetime in Ireland of the pro-life movement, of so many people saying that every life was sacred. And I asked a Swedish journalist colleague, an excellent journalist who works for that Expressive newspaper, actually, and she said, you have to understand that in Sweden, we don't really care about the elderly. And that shocked me. And she said, no. So we're emancipated very, very quickly. At 18, she moved out of home. She moved to a different city, far from where she grew up. And she became her own person.
Yes.
And that really is the way. And you, there's no sense that, you know, you would move in with your parents or your parents would move in with you. You know, that they looked after you when you were young and you should look after them when they're old. There's no sense of that whatsoever in Swedish society. And she explained that to me as being part of the reason why people were prepared to almost turn a blind eye or to accept the consequences of Tegnell's mitigation strategy, despite the fact that to you and me, these would be such shocking numbers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When we project forward, Philip, as Tegnell urges us to do, and he's projecting forward years, what does he expect? I mean, that death toll of 14,000, when you set it against the neighbouring countries in Scandinavia, or indeed against here, is deeply shocking. And is there any sign that in terms of the vaccine resistance, or indeed the deaths, that Tegnell is reconsidering?
I think he has had something of an intellectual chastening through this whole process, Eamon. I think he is looking at vaccines now. He is looking at the vaccine resistance as being the next big thing. He actually describes the 20% of people who have had no jab whatsoever as being the problem. And this is to say something like that in Swedish is to, you know, yes. Again, that's accusing people of, you know, again, you're looking for conflict when you do that. And to describe them in that way, for a man in his position in public life to describe them in that way is very, very serious. He predicts that we're going to continue living with this virus in this way into pretty much the middle of next year. He doesn't see, you know, himself overcoming the vaccine resistance until the middle of next year. The story is the same in Sweden as it is everywhere else. The people who are winding up in intensive care now are the people who get COVID and who are unvaccinated, okay?
Yes.
People who are vaccinated are still getting COVID, but they're not getting sick to the same extent. They're
yes.
not getting as sick as if they hadn't been vaccinated. And that to him has now, this whole process has morphed under the year and a half that he has been steering this particular ship in this direction. So now he's moved on to the next phase of it. I think the mitigation for him is over, and this has now become a vaccine program. And if you remember the discussions we had about his time in Africa dealing with Ebola, there's a huge amount of experience there.
Yes.
And I would never like to give the opinion that this man is not a man, you know, is a man who doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not. He's extremely well-read and extremely intelligent. It's just that he seems to have drawn very much the wrong conclusions compared to what other epidemiologists have done throughout this. So I don't see him stepping down anytime soon. I don't see a new prime minister having any effect whatsoever on Sweden's strategy. I think we're with Tegnell now and that he's going to see this out.
Right. And just a couple of final questions, Philip. In terms of there's 57% of people who've been double jabbed,
yep.
which really is a very low number. And it's comparisons you could make with the United States of America, where vaccine resistance is, you know, very strong, particularly in certain states, Florida and Texas would be two examples of Republican governors and Trump followers. But the in terms of, are people wearing masks? Are people social distancing? Football stadiums, for example, and concerts, are all of those things happening?
They are to a certain extent, right? I'll give you a very good comparison now with our near neighbours in Denmark. I was lucky enough to cover the European Championships in football in the city of Copenhagen,
yeah.
the Danish capital, in June. And when I went down there, they had a thing down there called a Corona Pass, which in English is a Corona Passport. So essentially, you had to have three things. You either had to have evidence that you had been double vaccinated, which I was, but because it was Swedish, they wouldn't accept it. You had to have evidence that you had had COVID-19, or you had to have had a negative test in the last 72 hours. So right beside the Parken Stadium in Denmark, in Copenhagen, there was this huge tent, Eamon, where you could walk in and you could do a test. And within an hour, you would know whether you were positive or negative.
Right.
And then you would have a QR code in your phone and you would show that then at the turnstile at the Parken Stadium.
Right.
And if you were negative, you would get in. In Sweden, I was at a game the other day. There's a young Irishman, Zach Elbuzedi, playing for AIK here. I went to see him play. 12,300 odd people, no COVID tests. Now, there was social distancing there. Certain parts of the ground were closed. Last night, when as we're talking here, Sweden played Spain last night,
and
the stewards didn't.
Yes.
It was a fantastic win, 2-1. But the stewards went around and they sort of split up families sitting together because there was supposed to be 1 meter between every seat and that. But these things aren't being adhered to. I was in Japan for the Olympics. Again, it's a charmed life I lead. And everything was very, very strict because things were spiking enormously in Tokyo at that point. Masks on all the time, the moment you left your hotel room. And then I came back to Sweden and I didn't see another mask for weeks. Occasionally you would see, you know, an elderly person out doing their shopping with a mask on. But, you know, UEFA basically mandated if you go into a stadium to cover the game, as a journalist, you have to wear a mask, but the crowd don't. So, you know, UEFA is coming in because they have this blueprint for all of Europe, but the Swedish crowd who are sitting there don't have to wear them at all. So it's an amazing way, like this dichotomy that happens. It can be so serious in Japan, so serious in Norway and Denmark, and yet masks never took off in Sweden. Tegnell wasn't anti-mask, but there's a certain thing now, and this also feeds into the idea of this vaccine antipathy. So because of the fact that they didn't push as hard as Norway did or as hard as Denmark did, people can be very blasé about this illness. There's, okay, well, I've had one dose of the vaccine, so I've some level of protection. So, you know, why would I be in a hurry to get the second? So, and it's literally that thing of, I'm not going to go out of my way to get the second dose. I can get it in a month, I can get it in 2 months, or, you know, rather than getting it in there, getting it over with and getting it done. So they really have created a rod for their own backs by not being stricter. Now, they always try to say, you know, well, this is, you know, wash your hands, keep your distance, etc. But by not being, you know, stricter, by not enforcing these things to the best of their ability, they've now created a situation where people, you know, kind of take or leave the advice that they're given by the public health authorities and indeed by Tegnell.
With 14,000 people passed on, is there any sense in Sweden that they've got it wrong?
I think if there is, it's
badly wrong.
Yeah, I think if there is, Eamon, it's one of those things that Sweden is a great country for talking about its triumphs, but much less so about its mistakes. And I think that, you know, it's certainly when it comes to things like integration here, it's one of those things that they almost don't even have a vocabulary to talk about it.
Yes.
You know, if it comes to, you know, technology and to ABBA, we have, you know, any amount of talk about those things. But there'll be huge headlines about ABBA today, but very little about what they got wrong. And in fact, it's actually very difficult to raise those things. I know there's an Irishman here who actually left Sweden because he started to lift these things and how the media was covering this story. And he was basically getting hand-delivered letters to his home and he felt threatened and had to leave Stockholm. So he moved back to Ireland. So it really is very, very difficult to have a nuanced discussion about these things and to actually ask the questions that you are asking about it. Did they get it? It's a very simple question. It's a very difficult one to answer. And it's one that this society is not prepared to discuss. And it may never be prepared to answer that particular question.
Okay, Philip, thank you very much indeed for a fascinating report from Stockholm. We're very grateful to you. We're very grateful to all our listeners. I think we're all very grateful we're not living in Sweden like poor old Philip. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.